like to bring the meeting to order, so let's rise. And who would like to lead us in a flag salute today? Up for us?
Okay.
Ready? Begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right. I neglected to do the roll call first because I was so excited about the flag salute. So we'll do the roll call now. Trustee Hansen?
Present.
Trustee Corpus?
I am here.
Trustee Zito?
Present.
Trustee Welch?
Here.
Bonnie Mace? Aye. And Dr. Flores sitting next to me. So before we start with the budget study session, we have matters from the public. 2.1, comments from the CSEA. Is anyone here representing CSEA? Holly? No? Okay. Comments from the ETA? Brian?
Good evening. So I'm going to take you through a couple of things with your permission, patience. So I have a set of stuff for everybody, just basically like that.
Okay.
If that's all right.
Yeah.
I'll try to go quickly. I don't know if I'm being kind. I don't do anything quickly anymore, but I'll do it.
Here you go.
Okay. Okay. We're good. Okay.
So yeah. Absolutely.
What I want to start with is passing on, and I tried to put it in order, and I'll get to obviously is briefly students and students first as well. But I wanted to start with the document that you looked at in June, I believe, which had the estimated actual. So I just highlighted it for everybody. So the total projected income was 120 million and change. The total projected expenditures almost 120. And then the projected ending balance, I just use that number for comparison, at 26.7 million. So that was from June with the estimated actuals. So then the next document is the unaudited actuals from September. So you can see again highlighted a nice bump in revenues. And please understand, I'm not complaining. I understand your job is difficult, and having to do a three-year budget, balanced budget, shows the total expenditures a little higher than what was in June. But then if you turn it over, you can see an ending balance of 31.5, which is a wonderful improvement. As you've heard me say a million times, it's one of the reasons why we struggle with projections, because they tend to change so rapidly. So the next document I found fascinating. I hope you do too. If you look on the side at the top that says 2013-14, this is when the LCFF was implemented. Obviously, you can tell this was designed for Santa Fe Unified, but I just went ahead and highlighted Evergreen. So you can see when the first year of implementation, we were 28 in the county at $6,171, and we were negative 21% from the average. Right, so we knew we were a low-funded district prior to the LCFF. But what's concerning to me is if you flip the document over and now you look at 18-19, look what's happened to us. We're actually worse percentage-wise. Yes, our number's gone up, and believe me, if somebody had told me in 2013-14, and I think, Bonnie, you started in 12, and Jim started in 10.
Mm-hmm.
So you may have had this feeling like it's getting harder every time we do this. This is why, because if somebody would have said to me, look, we're going to go up by $2,500 over the course of 5 years, that sounds great, but in terms of comparison, mm-hmm. we're now 29, and we're farther away from the average. So what has happened is the rich have gotten richer, right? Because if you look at the number one back in 2013, the number one in terms of funding was Mountain View Los Altos. They were at they had 75% above the average funding. Now in 1819, it's Campbell Union, and they're 122% of the average funding. Right? So again, if you're feeling like, why does this get harder every year? This is essentially why. And again, we talked about it in San Jose, but it's essentially because it's the same problem.
It's the same
San Jose
problem.
And everything, because we do not have those high numbers in terms of unduplicated accounts. So obviously, this does bring me back to the resolution that we passed in San Jose unanimously. What is good about the resolution in favor of the Schools and Communities First, the National PTA organization has also endorsed Schools and Communities First, which is unusual for them, forgive me, but for them to be political. Because of this, and because of the fact that San Jose has has this resolution. I have now been to three school PTA meetings talking about the Schools and Communities First. If you are willing, and again, I just use this as a little folder, but I do love this explanation of Schools and Communities First, because I think I've shared this with you already, but just very quickly, it has the history of how we got here, how we fix it, all the organizations that are in support. I'm thrilled, since I'm just turned 59, that AARP is on board, and of course, Santa Fe Unified is on board, and I would love to assist Evergreen with being on board as well. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Brian. Okay, so now we're going to have our budget study session, and I appreciate everyone being here. And so before we start, I'm going to have Dr. Flores give us a little intro about why we're here and what we're planning on doing today before we get into conversation. So Dr. Flores, go ahead.
So I shared at the September 12th school board meeting, the Santa Clara County Office of Education reviewed and conditionally approved our school district budget. Today's special board meeting will provide an opportunity for the board to gather data, to discuss the financial conditions of our school district, and to explore solutions to addressing the third year out budget deficit. And we actually have a presentation. We have enough copies for everybody in the room. With that, there's also a spreadsheet. And Dolores, our CFO, will now share important information, and I will be interjecting as we move through and discussing this information that offers possible ways to stabilize our school district's budget.
So once again, the purpose of this meeting today is to provide direction on a fiscal stabilization plan, which we need for the county. So Dolores, would you like to start?
Reiterating what Dr. Flores said, we received, as we anticipated when we brought in the adopted budget, we received a conditional approval from the county office. They sent a letter to us September 6th.
And gave us till October 8th, which is an ed code date. However, the county has indicated that they will work with us in our board dates because they're so close to that October 8th date. The October 10th board meeting will fall close enough. So what they have required of us, what ed code requires of us, is to provide for them a fiscal stabilization plan, and the county letter indicated that shows any increases or decreases in the ending fund balance from 18-19, as well as a plan that provides a minimum of 3% reserve in all of the years of the multi-year, the current and two subsequent years. So just as a reminder, the financial reporting requirements, we discussed this a little bit. You will recall at the meeting that we adopted the budget, we talked about that the county does not certify budgets. They either approve them, conditionally approve them, or disapprove them. When they conditionally approve them, which is where we are, they do require more information from us to either then approve or disapprove. Interim financial reports are certified. So we either receive a positive certification, and we certify ourselves, and the county office always has the opportunity to change that certification if they desire. A positive certification indicates that we will meet our obligations in the current and two subsequent years. A qualified certification means that we may not in the current or two subsequent years, and a negative certification means that our multi-year indicates we will not meet our obligations. So as a reminder, the adopted budget that we brought to the board and discussed at the time what would happen with the conditional approval indicated the reserve for economic uncertainties would be negative by the third year out, as would our general fund. So just a reminder that the red columns are the 3%, so we can kind of see what we need to do to get where we need to be.
Let us finish sentence. So if you have a clarifying question, go ahead.
Yes. So on this particular slide, I see requirements for uncertainty is 3.6 million in 18-19, but it grows to 3.9 million in 21-22, yet our revenues drop.
It's not based on revenues, it's based on expenses. So our expenses climb a little bit. So this graph was in our county letter as well. Just kind of pulled that out of there, but yes, it's calculated. We have to meet it in the unrestricted general fund, but it's calculated on both the restricted and unrestricted expenditures, total expenditures.
Yeah, so once again, it's the expenditures. I had that question
correct.
Last year,
yes.
Too. It's the expenditures and not the revenues.
Correct.
Chris?
And this graph is June data?
It is what we adopted in June, yes.
Okay. And like we said, we knew it was going to be different.
Yes, we discussed.
Do we have a graph that reflects the differences?
We have a table at the end that would show the considerations tonight rolled into the multi-year, what those would indicate. After we kind of go through the...
So you'll see, we'll bring
right.
that up.
I'll just say this.
Yes. Yes, things have changed.
They have, I know
yes.
they have changed.
So you'll see...
So this,
right.
This graph is...
So I'm just reminding you what the county reviewed, what we adopted and what the county reviewed. So their conditional approval is based on this data. The next slide is just kind of in words what went in, our assumptions that went into the adopted budget, continued decline each year. Which then in turn causes the deficit spending, which in turn causes the erosion of the ending balance or the reserve for economic uncertainties. So the consequences of an unapproved budget, which the county will have to make a determination on in a couple of weeks, whether they approve or disapprove based on our fiscal stabilization plan, are a number of things. The county office per ed code may do any one of these things, and they can also escalate that depending on response from the district. So they may assign a fiscal expert to advise the district. That's paid for by the county office. They may hire staff to provide assistance. That is a cost sharing. A little bit more so to the district than the county office. They could assign the fiscal crisis and management assistance team, FICMAT, to come in and review teacher hiring practices, retention, and assignments. They could assist in developing, in consultation with the governing board, a financial plan that will meet the obligations. They could also develop and impose in consultation with the state superintendent. So that's usually the one you hear about in, say, Englewood, ongoing issue in Englewood. The state superintendent has assigned somebody there to make the decisions for the district that will meet their obligations.
So now you've done this one section here, so I want Dr. Flores now, before we start the next section, to kind of preface it a little bit, and then we'll go into the next section, unless anyone has a clarifying question about what we just discussed with Dolores.
Well, that last one, the worst case scenario, ain't going to happen.
Go ahead.
We will not lie. We will make sure we do our due diligence.
Yeah.
I'm just hoping that somewhere in there we compare this with where we were at 1 year ago. This is not much different than where we were a year ago, from what I could recall.
So Dolores and I actually had a meeting with the county office superintendent as well as the CFO to discuss this, because they gave us a very short timeline, a quick turnaround. And essentially, some of the discussion basically is you need to come up with a plan that looks at that third year out. And two, in terms of things that could be considered, there are certain items that you would normally negotiate, anything like class size. Those are things that, or class size, or we have our trust. We have other things that we really cannot have there because they would need to be negotiated. The one thing that you will see is the potential for furlough days on the third year out. The county, for some reason, can accept that, especially since it's in the third year out. But anything else, basically, it's not on, if it needs to be negotiated that way, it can't be there. The other thing is, in terms of We know that we want to venture in some areas where I know we can make money. We did in my last district, such as childcare and preschool. And in fact, we have a service provider within our district who's making money off of it, and it's not us. However, that's on the if. We do not know exactly what those dollars are, and the county will not accept the budget on the maybes. It will accept the budget based on information that we have. So I think that really puts things into very difficult perspective, because looking back at cuts that have already been done within our district, it's quite a few of them. Okay, so the question is, where else do you start digging in? Because at the end of the day, it's about $13 million. Where do you go? And so as we go through this, you will see that as a cabinet, we dug deep to see, are we maximizing the use, for example, of our restricted funds? For example, might there be a service, an FTE? Here's an example that I keep putting out there. Might we have a social worker who's providing services in the area of mental health for a percentage of their day? Might we be able to claim some of that salary, move it to the restricted area? Same thing with routine maintenance. And you'll see that as we work through this. Our staff has dug very deep, and we were working on this until today, even looking at the possibility of furlough days. How can we pull? Is there anywhere where we could do things differently? Any cuts that we may make that do not directly impact students, such as, for example, the reduction of budgets at schools, that could be detrimental. We didn't want to go in that direction. And you'll see that it's actually not there. At this point, we were able to come up with a proposal to you that looks at we looked under every rock that we could and looked at all those potential possibilities. And so what we are presenting to you is really our best current thinking, taking into consideration the services to our kids, and taking into consideration that there are items that need to be negotiated and wouldn't be able to put into this proposal to you for consideration.
Okay, so hold on 1 second. So now we have basically the preface on what we can, what we can't put in here, what the purpose is for this moving forward is primarily for the County Office of Education, a plan, right, a piece mm-hmm. of paper. Jim?
So basically this is what we could do, not necessarily what we will do. Is that a fair statement?
It is a fair statement, and today you are presented with information. At the next board meeting, you will be voting on this, and based on your vote, the actions that we take will either add up to $13 million or not. And depending on that, the type of report we submit to the county will be based on your decision as a board on all of those items.
So once again, just so the public understands that what we're doing is we're doing a fiscal stabilization plan, because the county has asked us to do a fiscal stabilization plan. Doesn't necessarily mean that these things will be implemented. We could do other things, but at the end of the day, we're going to have to take action that comes up with this amount of money, right? So that the road we start will be one of the paths that we go through. But once again, that's what we're doing today. It's a fiscal stabilization plan. It's not a budget in the way that we normally do a June budget.
And just as a remember that we come to budget every year, mm-hmm. and adjustments get made. And yes, we're looking at creating programs. Yes, we are looking at programs that will generate some funds, such as childcare before and after school, preschool. However, those numbers cannot be taken into consideration right now, because right now they are not a reality, not until we actually deliver those services. So this is an ongoing cycle of budgeting that districts, you've gone through year after year.
Okay, so now we're going to go through the PowerPoint on the considerations, and then we will ask for some opinions about how we move forward. So go ahead, Doris.
First thing are revenue enhancements. That's always the first thing we want to look at before we look at expenditure reductions, is what kind of things can we add to our revenue that will help, that are viable, that the county will consider them viable at this point. The first thing is not exactly revenue, but it's the higher ending balance or higher beginning balance for 1920 that came from 1819. Very simple. That 2.95 we talked about at the last board meeting just being rolled forward into the multi-year. and taking credit for that, if you will, it causes our reserves to be a little bit higher to begin with. So the deficit spending defrays those a little bit less. Saturday school, we will be bringing a contract to the board at the next board meeting. You're all aware. We are beginning the process of starting Saturday school. The reason the revenue looks a year out is we will be starting that partial year. It's new to us. We have a smaller amount in 2021 than the amount in 21-22. Reason it's in 2021, not 19-20, is because we have the prior year guarantee on our ADA. State guarantees that we will be funded at either the current ADA or the prior year ADA, whichever is greater. And because we are in decline, the prior year is greater. So it will cause us to see that revenue in 2021. Increased use of facilities. We are limited by the Civic Center Act as to what we can charge. However, we're going to do a kind of an in-depth process. We can recoup our expenses and make sure that we're counting all of those expenses while we have a small escalator each year built into our fees. We've had salary schedule increases. PERS has gone up. So we just want to make sure that we're looking at the recouping all of our costs. The development of the Martin property. The board has discussed that several times. We believe that we can move forward and try to get, you know, some solutions there. We will, at a later board meeting, not in October, bring a contract that will start the services again. We think that by mid-year 2021, we would have some solutions in place. Don't really know what they are at this point, but looking at those again, we have gone down that road far enough in the past, as I understand it, that we know it can be done. It's just finding the right fit and the right broker and all of that. So just kind of looking at all of that, and we'll bring that back. We'll talk more at a later date on that.
Okay. Oh, come on. So now we move into the tough part, the reductions.
So the first one, supplemental funding savings. As our LCFF dollars shrink because we have less students, our supplemental dollars shrink because we have less students. Also means we're serving less students. So we can pull those expenses down, still keep our costs contained within the supplemental funding we receive, and look at lowering those expenses. This was part of the stabilization plan back in 2017. You may remember that we were budgeting considerably higher, I think, at that point, but just kind of keeping those in line with the current revenue. So that's built into can be built into the multi-year. I mentioned at the last board meeting that the we anticipated that the nutrition fund would need a contribution from the general fund in 18-19, and I'm so very pleased to say it did not, and very proud of the staff that managed to contain the costs. So they not only did not need a contribution, they also grew their surplus. They went into the year with the surplus. So with that surplus, we can reduce what we budgeted in the way of a contribution in 19-20 and reduce future years because they're doing many right things and just kind of building those in. We think we can reduce those, and that they won't need the contribution we built into the budget based on 18-19. And then reduce expenses for licenses and other contracted services. We just want to take a look this year to make sure that we don't have any duplicate licenses for the same types of things that we're paying for. And we want to also look at our vendors and that's the contracted services piece. Make sure that if we're contracting out for something, you know, we probably need to, but are we getting quotes and making sure that we are with the most cost-effective vendor that we can be. So we've already started that process this year, but I believe that we can really tighten those up next year. reduce currently unfilled positions. The board may recall that when we built the adopted budget, we discussed some open positions that were reflected in that budget to provide Dr. Flores some flexibility as she came in the way of staffing. We feel at this point that could be reduced, what we currently have unfilled, and it's the same unfilled that we had back in June. It's nothing new, and reduce those and still provide the ongoing things that Dr. Flores wishes to do. We'll just reduce those open positions, move a little bit of the budget. So the maximize restricted funding sources gets a little confusing because I think this requires a fresh look, if not every year, every couple of years. I've done this type of thing in I think all of my districts, is looking back at what we've charged percentage-wise to some of our restricted programs and making sure if those percentages are still in line with the services being done. So if we have staff that we're charging 10%, are they still performing 10%, or has it gone up to more like 20% of their work that could fall into routine restricted maintenance? I have a really hard time saying that every time. And the mental health, we carried over a large amount, you will recall, in mental health dollars. So we want to make sure that we're using that. There are restrictions on those dollars. So it's looking at all the staff and asking a lot of questions, especially for someone like me and someone like Dr. Flores. What does this person do? How much of their time do they spend doing that? So in looking at those amounts, we believe there's couple hundred thousand dollars there that we could maximize between those two programs and possibly some other smaller ones. We would look at all of our restricted funding. Then reduce unrestricted department budgets, district department budgets, to actual spending levels. About another $250,000 there, and what that means is that $2.95 million that came into the ending balance came from somewhere. This is not cutting school site budgets at all. It's simply looking at all of our department budgets, all of our district level budgets, and saying unrestricted budgets, and saying we only spent this so we could lower the budget and gather the savings instead of continuing to budget a little higher and rolling that into the ending balance. Let's take part of that now so that we can take credit for it in the stabilization plan. Savings of additional 2 FTE due to declining enrollment. We adopted the budget with 5 FTE for declining enrollment built into the multi-year. I've looked at that. I think that this year was a little bit of an anomaly as we came into this year that we reduced 14, but I think that 7 is still a conservative estimate. I believe that we could take credit for a couple more there. 5 has been traditionally used. They'll reduce 3 FTE management positions. Those are going to be determined in the next portion of this year. Really look at those and see where we can reduce there. And then the furlough days that Dr. Flores mentioned, this is in that final year that we talked about, that it's a little uncertain. A lot of things can change before then. We could have more state funding. There's a lot of things that could change. But in this district, there are some things that can change. Some of those revenue-generating programs that we don't currently run. Anything that we do to help the bottom line by that third year, this would be looked at again. It's on there because it's something that the county has indicated, because it's in the third year out, they understand that we will have other things that we will be looking at as well. With that said, the final consideration for the board tonight is the school consolidation of 3 schools to create efficiencies and reduce expenses. Some time ago, an estimate was created that's about $400,000 per year. That is still true. That is in the office, basically the office staff, the school administration, what it takes to run the school, the principal, those places. It's not in the teachers. We still have the same number of students. So with that, we would look at, there might be some potential revenue that we could generate from those school sites. We would be looking at those fee-based programs that we've talked about several times tonight, and looking at using our schools in that manner to generate some fees, and possibly leasing of properties. There are some non-public schools and agencies that have had interest in other districts when they have had properties vacant, so those are something that would not compete with us, and of course anything we look at would be with that in line. So just a reminder of information that we talked about at the last board meeting with the enrollment is the exit reasons and why those students are leaving. This is based on the data that the site staff can gather. Sometimes that's not always easy to come by, but it's the information they put into our system, and it's the data we pull to say what happened, where are these students going.
And if I may add that these numbers here is based on what was provided there. So at times, if the staff did not provide the reason where that child has gone, we can't account for that information. But this is based on the ones that we were able to capture based on the work done at the sites. And because many children were also, a lot of these come to district, that sometimes our gals in the front are able to capture that information as well.
Okay. The next chart comes solely from the November 2018 enrollment report or demographics report, and shows the decline over time. I pulled this one because the numbers, the blue line, are accurate numbers that they pulled at the time of the report. The red is projected, so some of the 18 and the 19 years, we have actual data. They're not projected any longer because it came from this report. That was the best picture I could come up with without recreating the graph. But in looking at them, and I was looking at them, they are pretty close. Enrollment changes every day, so it kind of depends on what day you pull the data. We tend to run pretty static throughout the year, which is from what I could see in past years, we don't seem to have a loss all year long. If we do, it's very slight. And I worked in a district that had been in decline for I think a total of 10 years, and they every week they lost students. We did comparisons every week. So that's kind of a unique thing that I find a little fascinating, because I find numbers fascinating. But so these numbers are still pretty close. Even the projected ones that have now come to pass are pretty close. They're within a very small percentage of what actually happened.
So when you calculate the savings in FTEs when we have declining enrollment, are you using 35-1, or what numbers do you come up with for that?
No, more, it really is more of a trend, because you've heard me say, I think you've heard others say, students don't leave in nice class size packages. We don't lose 25 from kindergarten at one school. Generally, we may lose 10 from one grade across the whole district. Well, that doesn't equate to an FTE always. It might, which I think is the anomaly this year, as we went down 14, as we reached that point where, okay, now the shift was great enough at enough schools that we went down that FTE. So it's a little bit of a looking at trends, looking at numbers, looking at our ebb and flow of the change factor in our schools and our grades, and just staffing as our allocations being as tight as they can be. Mm-hmm. You know, first day of school is always, sometimes it just falls differently, but for the most part, as I could see in the history, 7 is a pretty good conservative number in the FTE, and I wish they left a little neater, because then I could apply a ratio to it. But I just, even district wide, it's very difficult or very risky to do that. You could overstaff or understaff. So it's just kind of looking at the schools, looking at just the what they call just the straight line of. We get fewer kindergartners because 5 years ago fewer children were born than we have in our eighth grade class. So just that straight line decline is oftentimes what a lot of districts experience, and that's it. We're losing a little bit all the way across, but so I know that probably didn't really answer your question.
I understand what you're saying on a year-to-year basis. Mm-hmm. Absolutely, it doesn't happen in neat bundles. Mm-hmm. But over a trend, when you've got 5 years worth of data, and you've lost, instead of just 350 kids, you've lost something like 1,800 kids, then it tends to even out, right? Mm-hmm. You get smoothing. Theoretically, if you lost 1,800 kids, there should be close to, unless we have class size reduction, which I don't believe is occurring anywhere, I haven't heard it, I wish it was, I don't see where we, over a course of 5 years or so, it should average out to whatever our normal class size is, right? Average out, right?
I haven't pulled all that data and viewed it. I'm intrigued by it, but I'm looking at the trend in the FTE loss. So I kind of think it's kind of comparing the same thing, because if we know traditionally we lose 300 to 400 students, a high mark of 500, then that's 7 has been a conservative estimate. And at this point, not only is my comfort level on the conservative side, and believe me, you want that in the CBO, because you would rather have that than me coming back and saying, wow, we blew it, we need to add, you know, 10 FTE, and now we don't have a positive certification. However, I will also say that the county office, it has to pass the sniff test to the county office, if you will. They have to say that's reasonable. County office being a superintendent and a CBO, and he's the new CBO there, has been a CBO for many years in quite a few districts. So they're looking at it for reasonableness, and they're going to say if the trend is you lose this many students and you go down that many FTE, that's probably pretty conservative. So,
but this is going to, encourage the district, the board, to make some decisions that, frankly, when we pull the trigger, it's done. And being conservative is great. I'm all for it. Always been that way. But the numbers have to reflect reality. So my feeling is before we pull the trigger on something that's so draconian as consolidating schools and changing the whole culture of a community, then we need to really make sure that we go back, check all those numbers, and ensure that those estimates are correct. I'm not saying they're not. I'm just saying that, you know, we're taking small little slices now. We need to look at long-term trends.
And so that's what this discussion is about. So when we identify something like that, then we come back to you with that data, looking at all the information. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, so now we're going to... you have one more question? Go ahead, Chris.
I just, in response to my conservative friend here, you made me chuckle when you said that. You've always been conservative in a good way. We need that. Projecting the FTE, correct me if I'm wrong, Leela, but because they don't leave in, you know, perfect packages, nor perfect packages at schools, mm-hmm. we do have trend line, but the principals can do move forwards, and they can do a FTE projection. That would probably be right on. So that's the way you do business, I'm sure.
When we do our allocations, we do the grades moving forward.
Right, but in terms of trying to predict, you do your allocations in March. I'm saying could be done now, just as a trend line. Nothing to, and nothing that means it's true. It just means here's some possibilities.
So if that provides data, that along with, we'll look at all those variables,
right,
because if that's data that you need, even though it's early on, but we could reasonably project that that may be the case. We could try to bring that information to you.
If the rough estimate says 7, that's great. If the rough estimate says more, we'll stick to 7.
We will do that. We'll bring that information.
Seven, yeah.
So the trends in the last 5 years or so, and then looking at this year based on current numbers.
Just
slide
them up.
Okay. So I'm hearing that as a direction that we want to see from Dr. Flores.
I'm just bringing it up for discussion. I'm not sure if we
want to. Well, not a formal direction, but the recommendation that she can bring that back to us. Okay. Anyone else? Okay, go ahead, Dolores. We have this slide now. Right.
So the considerations that were outlined in the previous slides built into the multi-year would put us at meeting our 3% reserve across all years of the multi-year. This multi-year also takes into account, obviously, the higher beginning balance, because that's part of one of the considerations. Anyway, it's already done. It's not even a consideration. It's just what happens. But it's also taking into consideration the things we did not know it adopted budget. So that would be the little bit of change between STIRS and PERS that happened right at the end of the year. That is built in here. There's like a savings in 1 year and a higher expense in another year, so it's kind of a wash, but that's all reflected, and it does impact the reserves.
Okay. So before we start the next steps, Emmy, did you want to
comment? Yes. The next steps are pretty, it's pretty basic. I mean, at this point, if there's, I've heard a recommendation in looking at our FTEs. We will look at that. If there's something else that you would want us to investigate and gather data on, we can certainly bring that to you, because the decisions you will be making at the next board meeting will have huge impact on all sorts of things. So whatever information that you need from us, we'd be more than happy to dig in and provide more data for you.
So could I make a couple of suggestions?
Yeah, hold on 1 second. Did you have anything about, before we move on, did you have anything in your presentation, just so we do this in a formalized manner? Okay, Jim, go ahead.
Yeah, just doing an off-the-cuff calculation. I've got the numbers here that Mrs. DeGuara provided from back 14-15 on.
Is this it?
And no, it's something that he gave what you gave us was, I think, 15-16 on, but he gave us 1 year earlier last year. So that's a total of 5 years, 14-15 through 19-20, and we went, according to the totals there, 12,853 down to what we just got in the last number, to 10,431. That's a difference of 2,422, give or take. So, you know, maybe it's off by a few here, a couple here and there, not a big deal. Still over 2,400. If you take it at 35 to 1, which would be what, grade 3 and above?
Four.
Four and above, right? Then it's 70 FTEs. If you take it at 24 to 1, which is the primary grades, then it's 100 FTEs, right? So somewhere in there, between 70 and 100, should be the number of FTEs that we have fewer this year than we had back in 14-15. So I'd like to see, what is that number, right? What is that number? And based on that, that tells us the trend of how many FTEs we're losing based on enrollment.
We'll
get you that.
So Jim is asking for FTE data, right? Some more FTE data.
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So that's fine.
May I add?
Yes.
And you also asked us to look at enrollment numbers right now and projections for next year.
By school. By grade.
So what we're looking here for tonight is not a vote on this, but any other data that you would like the superintendent to bring back between now and the next board meeting, which will be on October 10th, in order to, once again, complete a fiscal stabilization plan for use by the County Office of Education. That's the focus of what we're doing. So is there any other
things that we need data on, or you need extra information on, or clarification on, or anything like that?
I have a question.
Marissa?
I know a couple of years ago you did a SERP, and you followed with Eastside, and Eastside's already going to do a SERP again. Mm. It's only been 3 years, I believe, but that's always something to think about when we're trying to save money. I know that's a big thing to try to whip up in a couple of weeks, but it is something that we need to consider always when we're trying to figure out if we can save money, because they always do save money. Okay. So I have no idea what the FTE would look like for our savings. And then...
hold on 1 sec. So we're just going to do digital, right? For reframing what you said. So we're just going to ask for data on a SERP, on a potential SERP, yes. What the ramifications would be. Okay.
And then, you know, this piece of paper always drives me nuts, because we know we're going to have less students and less revenue. And then you see the expenses go down, but then they go back up again, even though our revenue continues to go down, down, down. This just drives me nuts, and this happens in every district. Mm. And this is the first thing that we see, where we see the revenue going down, but then the expenses don't match it. And I get it, too, like you said, just because the kids leave, we can't take a portion of a person here and a portion of a person there. But I would think that the expenses would go down a little bit more than this is showing.
Dolores?
So that bothers me.
Can you?
I can. Part of the nuance to that is mm-hmm. the increase in the STRS and PERS rates. Mm-hmm. Those go up. That drives our cost up. Mm-hmm. Step and column for all the units, mm-hmm. Just on the natural, will go up, even with some FTE going down. Mm-hmm. There's just the way it works, and mm-hmm. and there aren't any escalators in in the other numbers in mm-hmm. the what I call the things, the mm-hmm. the fours, fives, and sixes, the contracted services, the mm-hmm. the materials. There aren't any escalators built into those unless we absolutely know about them, mm-hmm. and usually those are in the more current mm-hmm. Years, not in far out in the subsequent years. So we have an estimate built in for step and column. We have an estimate built in, well, not an estimate, we have rates built in for STRS and PERS. And
so you're only doing step and column. Obviously, you're not making any assumptions
correct.
About any future negotiations of salary increases or anything like that.
Correct.
You're just doing a straight step and column based
yes.
on the current staff that we have.
Yes.
Not assuming that some of those people are going to retire. Did you make any assumptions about people who might retire?
Yes. There's a... the way that we did it is mm-hmm. in the FTE, the dollar amount for the FTE, we have that at kind of the high, not the mid-range, mm-hmm. but higher than that, which mm-hmm. kind of assumes some of those FTE are going to be retirements and all the way at the higher end of the salary schedule, mm-hmm. replaced with the lower end of the salary schedule. Mm-hmm. So it's not just taking a beginning year FTE, which is what a lot of districts do. It's mm-hmm. mixed into the FTE reduction, because that's what we've seen, is we have generally made them
so
up.
So you build in a trend based on, okay, in the past couple of years, this many people retired. It technically saved us this amount of money because they were replaced with somebody who makes a significant amount less.
Yes.
So you have a way to kind of do that trend over the 3 years.
Yes, it's a little, when you have a year like we did at the end of 18, 19, and mm-hmm. 20 retirements on the certificated side, mm-hmm. it makes you a little nervous on the how many more are there. Mm-hmm. That is a large amount in a district this size, very large amount of retirements in 1 year.
Mm-hmm.
So with that, it's are those going to, is that going to lower the out years?
Are we still looking at a lot of baby boomers that are at the point where they're going to be retiring?
Yes, we still have a chunk mm-hmm. that are kind of down there,
mm-hmm. near retirement.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, Marissa, did you need any more data on that, or are you? Was that a sufficient explanation from your perspective?
Yeah, I think
on
just
why
the surf idea, I just think is something we should consider possibly. I know it's a very short amount of time, but again, it's okay. just a savings that we could have built in.
Okay, Jim.
So, to tack on to Trustee Marissa's comment about SERP, I agree, but I would like to find out what the efficacy was of the last SERP. There were some projections made as far as how much we were going to save, mm-hmm. When was going to kick in, that sort of thing. So it's real important to understand, you know, how well did it work last time?
Okay, so I'm hearing how well did the previous SERP work? Okay, Chris?
Can we have that reset?
Oh, absolutely.
I'd like to review it.
The SERP from last time?
SERP from last time.
Can you resend the SERP from last time?
The next thing would be is, it seems we're starting to really look at schools consolidation, the date that was put on here. I guess the dates that you're going to forward to the county is starting 2021, which is next year. If you're going to do that, then the according to the state's Board of Education, the checklist that we need to go through means that we should have probably started 6 months ago. That being the case, put together a plan that talks about both boundary changes and school consolidation choices as far as what criteria will we use. You know, data that I show shows there are schools that lost 40% in the last 5 years. Okay, and they are not the schools that we've been discussing. So it's interesting to look at, you know, what criteria we're going to use, what schools, you know, how we're going to choose. What we don't want to do is to have the problem we had last time, which was, you know, we've kind of jumped to the conclusion at the very beginning, and it caused people at schools to be very upset. And I wouldn't doubt if it contributed to the people leaving the schools, because they thought the schools wouldn't be open this year. So we don't want to cause a firestorm, you know, yell fire in a crowded theater kind of thing. So just what's the plan, how we go forward?
Okay, so once again, I'm reframing whatever. So a plan for how school consolidation might work, and criteria, as Jim said, criteria for how that might work moving forward.
And
boundaries. Anything else that we need from a data perspective to make a, because we'll be essentially deciding on this next time. Chris?
Back into position control, the number of retirees versus the number we need is we had retirees that weren't backed up with an employee, so they actually had close to full savings. You had to set aside for their
and we had a savings of, I believe it was $1.4 million mm-hmm. coming into 1920. Mm-hmm. And that was the...
So how many that was retirees that weren't backfilled?
Not all 20 of those certificated retirees were teachers. There were a couple, right. Two administrators. So mm-hmm. of the retirees, we were able to go down 14 FTE. We replaced six of those people, even if you're... looking at beyond teachers, but with that you look at the numbers and you go, okay, so that caused a savings of $1.4 million.
That's the number I wanted.
Yeah.
So also that following on that question of, like Chris's questions of backfilling the retirees and how much did we save, and right moving forward if we do a SERP, how much will we save? All these are FTE questions. Mm-hmm. So maybe if you could provide more data in general about our FTE projections, because it sounds like a lot of you are asking about FTE projections moving forward. How many people do we have close to retirement? Things like that, right, Chris?
Yeah, just weird question. Yeah, I'm sure you have a scattergram of our number of years of service, so we can see where the bulk of the teachers are in terms of being close to retirement, or is it the classic dumbbell now? It used to be a classic dumbbell, but the thing has changed.
After this 20, I'd have to look at it again. I would be honest with you. I do need to look at it again, but I think, you know, that I don't think it's as heavy as it was, obviously, if 20 left. So
so that's a good piece of data for all of us, and a lot of us are asking that question about what does the teaching force look like in terms of years of service, because then we can assess who's close to retirement, right, all these kinds of questions. Any other piece of data? Marisa?
I wanted us to look into contracted bus services. Okay. I've talked about that before, and I've talked about how I wanted to see a presentation. Because being the math person that I am, I think of the fact that we are contracting out some of the bus services because our pay is low for our CSEA bus drivers. So in a sense, you know, obviously I'm not negotiating or anything, but I'm just saying, what would it look like if we had something in the future where we negotiated something with them that would make it more appealing for them to be bus drivers, and at the same time, we're not contracting out that service and paying, you know, $700 a day. I think somebody quoted me that, and I don't know if that's true or not. But whatever it is, I mean, I think that there may be some savings in there if we can make the job more appealing and not have to contract out. Mm-hmm. So I'd like to see what are we spending versus if they were in-house bus drivers. What kind of savings could we build? And it might not be this school year, but maybe it's the second and the third school year.
Okay, so questions about contracted bus service and ways which we might have revenues or, you know, based on the changing of that. Jim?
So, again, I'll tack on to that very good idea. That's something we looked at about 5 years ago, and one of the things we negotiated was first right of refusal. And basically what that was all teachers had to go to or through whatever means they need to go through, but had to go through our transportation services first before they contracted out to anybody else. Now, whether or not that worked, whether or not that generated any savings, et cetera, I think it would be good, once again, to get a 360 on that
on
and see whether or not that accomplished what we
well,
want.
Well, I'm talking about just daily routes as well, because you know, my son is on an Evergreen bus right now, but for 2 years prior, every day he was brought home on a school services bus. So right now his route happens to be an Evergreen driver, but there are routes out there that are still providing for our special education that are not our own drivers.
So primarily special education bus routes and how.
Well, I believe we also have bus routes for kids that are in areas that we don't want them to walk to school in, which I think is which is great. It's a privilege. I don't know if other districts do that or not. But again, if those routes aren't covered by our own people and we're contracting out, that would also be costing us money.
Okay. Well, bus routes.
The other thing that I was going to say was we've been using the number 400,000 as a yearly savings for a school in consolidation. And what I'd like to do is a formal deeper dive on that. That also takes into consideration the costs to maintain the property while it's empty, you know, any other costs that are involved, plus the potential based on district averages, because we have gotten some anecdotal data from those who are supposed to be in the know of what percentage of students, when given that choice, if you will, that they're being moved to another school, do they go to that school or do they choose another choice? Mm-hmm. And we were told anywhere between 15% and 25% of the population may not move to the new school. So again, I think before we settle on, yeah, it's going to save us $400,000 a year, I'd like to have a little bit more data behind that, and maybe it's more, maybe it's less, but all the, you know, the dollars that's going to cost us to implement that consolidation as well, right?
So how do we come to $400,000?
Or so a deeper dive on the actual financial ramifications of closing schools, right?
Right.
Okay. Brian, you want to do a card? You have to come up if do you want to speak?
I didn't know if I could, so that's fine.
Well, you can come up and speak, but you got to do a card.
Deal.
Yeah. Okay. Anyone else? But hold on one sec. Anyone else have any things that we, you know, a deeper dive into anything that we need to understand? Okay, so I'll let Brian speak, and then that's the direction that we're giving to Dr. Flores. She's taking careful notes, so if there's nothing else, then we'll move forward, and between now and October 10th, we will try to get more of that information. Chris, did you have a question? Go ahead, Brian, just get up there while Chris is...
We would still have other discussion times, but...
Oh, yes.
The pie graph here...
Oh, you want to talk about... Okay, go ahead. Anything. Anything that's in the presentation you can ask questions on.
I know the numbers are raw. They don't capture everybody. But it says 10% went to charter school or private school. And my question is, how many of those are the middle school students who have to do what their future high school says?
So you want to break
down? Is that a natural number, or are we losing more than what is quote unquote, what would be quote unquote normal?
For middle schools, just for middle schoolers?
Well, you know.
So if I may say here that this data, from my understanding, hasn't been gathered before. This is our attempt. So we will see if there's past years data that I can find, but this is data that we've found this year because I wanted to know, like, where are these kids going?
Yeah.
Are they going to charters? Are they going to private? Are they moving out of state?
Yeah.
Are they moving out of the county?
Right. That was all my question.
But so I'll see what I can find. I don't guarantee that I'll have that information. Not sure how much of that was kept prior to me coming.
You have a lot to do, so.
Yeah.
But one of these days, if you find the answer, you can whisper it to me.
So the one recommendation that I would have would be that for the future going forward,
absolutely,
we keep more careful records of who goes out, where they go, why they go. Because to me, that's important. And Jim has asked for that several times. What's the market?
Yeah,
where are they going? So the fact that we have this at all is, and Leela has asked that as well. So it's a great thing. Thank you so much.
And we are gathering all sorts of data. Like, for example, I didn't have an opportunity to gather this data and go through it. But this is our dual immersion kids. Where are they going? How many per grade level, et cetera? So there's quite a few things that we are trying to gather data so that when you are making decisions, you have data to make those decisions from.
Thank you.
But I believe I do, I'm able to find out how many are middle school. That was your initial question.
Because it says where they go, what their middle school.
So two things in that regard. To your point, yeah, so 30% says charter or private school, fine. Over 50% said they moved, but somebody moved in to that house, right? It's not like the houses are left empty. So who moved in? Did old people move in with no kids like me? Or did young families move in and they're not sending their kids to our schools? Or they are and we're not counting that as
mm-hmm.
an offset, right?
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is I understood we had brought up one point a few meetings ago about the inter-district transfers that we have seen. And we tend to be pretty, at least from what I understand, we tend to be pretty non-confrontational about that. And we allow them much easier than other districts have allowed people coming into our district. So is there anything that we can look at that says, you know, how many kids are we losing to inter-district transfers that, you know, we're not making up with an equal number coming to us?
So I'm hearing you want to know more about the policy on inter-district.
That's just the policy. Well,
how other districts do.
What's the numbers been over the years?
Okay.
Yeah,
I think Chris has asked.
Are we positive? Yeah.
We'll get that info.
I think we were positive. One more thing about this graph, then. I guess we just need to say it's sort of a work in progress, isn't it?
It is.
It's a work in progress.
It's
not the final, don't publish
no judgments on the contents of this graph, because you'll get in trouble.
It's our first.
Don't eat this pie.
Yeah. It's our attempt to gather data. We want to be able to provide you information. If I also may say before, Brian, you speak, is that typically you will have any copies of any presentations. We were not working on these numbers until this morning. And I didn't want to provide any information out there without giving you, we didn't want to provide ill information. So for example, the furlough days, we have 2 days each year, starting next year. And we dug and we dug and we were able to make some changes that would only show that in the third year out. So my apologies for not getting this information to you like this, a copy of this earlier, but we really were working until this morning on this actual presentation for you.
And before Brian starts, I just want to say thank you to staff, because I know it's been very difficult. You've had to look at every single place where you could conserve, and we really do appreciate that you've been thoughtful mm-hmm. with Dr. Flores. You've really tried to be really thoughtful on this and keep it away from kids as much as possible. So on my behalf, thank you so much to staff. Brian.
So what I thought I would offer, if it's all right, is just some historical perspective, given the fact that the school closures are being talked about the Facility Advisory Committee from, I believe we presented a report in April of 2016, particularly since Pauline's not here as the chair. So if that's all right, just a few thoughts.
I would rather you can say what you want in public comment, but we're not
we're not talking about school closure right now. We're talking about this larger fiscal stabilization. So well, I prefer if you stay off of the, I'm going back to 2016, but go ahead.
Because the question came up about, you know, that the drops are being seen in different places.
Okay.
When we looked at the particular issues, we discovered that a region, which I believe we characterize as the Southwest region, but it's basically five schools, which, see if I can do this, Laurelwood, Ted Wallander, J.F. Smith, Dove Hill, and Montgomery, those five schools at the time had enough kids really for three. And one of the reasons why we focused on Dove Hill is because a portion of the students that currently attend Dove Hill are actually Whaley students. A portion of those students are actually Catherine Smith students. So were that school to be chosen, those students would then go back and would actually support the natural enrollment numbers for Whaley and for Catherine, for example. We projected, I think we did it for 5 years. The other thing too is, and I said this every time this third school comes up, and I'm not against it, but one of the things that we were very clear, because the demographer was very clear, focusing on two schools within that region contains the situation within that region. If you go to a third school, and it's absolutely, we talked about that may be the case, unfortunately, there was per the demographer, there was no way to do that without affecting the lines for the entire district. So the thought at the time was, while we looked at it, that this was a smaller bite of the apple to deal with the problem at the time. It's unfortunate, in my humble opinion, that more than 3 years have gone by and nothing's changed, except we have less kids. But so anyway, thanks very much.
Thanks. Okay, so I've heard any questions, any final clarification? Okay, so we will meet again on the 10th. We also have a study session on the 10th, just to let the board know and everyone know, we have a study session on the results of the tech bond poll. And so we'll be trying to determine some action going forward or not on the tech bond as well. Is there anything else that we need to know from a process perspective? No?
No, not at this time.
Not at this time. Okay. So, motion to adjourn?
Come on, go to adjourn.
Okay, thank you. Appreciate everybody coming, and we'll see.